seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
You gotta be feeling well if you're a Jazz fan. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. You know what I love so much about you, my listeners? Yesterday, I picked the Clippers to win Game 2. And when the game last night was final, I got 9 text messages. 3 numbers, I didn't even know who they were. Listeners telling me, what do you think now? Still like the Clippers? I love it. I love the passion from Jazz fans throughout the entire state. It was lacking last year. It really was. For a number of reasons, it was lacking. It's been lacking in years past. For the first time in a very long time, this is a team that has a legitimate chance to win the NBA championship. And I was not a believer going into the postseason. I gotta say I'm a believer now, but I'm starting to inch a little bit closer to that side of the spectrum. I think Brooklyn is phenomenal. I think Phoenix is phenomenal. I think the Clippers are a good team. So I don't know that this series is over yet, but Utah did exactly what they needed to do last night. And what makes it even more eye-opening is that Utah blew a 19-point lead in this game, something along those lines, and the Clippers had the lead with about 5 minutes to play, and the Jazz still found a way to get a win. And Donovan Mitchell is entering very rare air. We'll talk more about this series a little bit later. Game 2 tomorrow night, 6:30 start time, right here on KOAL, so we'll get to that later on in the show. Also, we are going to start talking high school football. We are 2 months away from the start of the 2021 season. Of course, Emory High School right here on KOAL. They will open up the season August 13th against the Carbon Dinos. So I want to start talking some high school football. Coach John Famalo is going to join us on the show today, and we'll preview what the offseason holds for Emory, and we'll even talk about the season and the new alignment, because Emory's two-way now in football. That's coming up on the show, and of course, we'll talk some NBA basketball. I want to do a quick scoreboard recap of what's happening right now. Major League Baseball, we did have a day game, the Chicago Cubs, actually, on the field against the St. Louis Cardinals. Final score in that game, 8-5. Craig Kimbrell picks up save number 16 for the Cubbies. We're now 36-27. Cardinals are not playing great baseball at the moment. And the thing about the Chicago Cubs, I don't know if this team's in rebuild mode or what, but here they are now, 9 games above 500. Good win for the Cubbies earlier today. 5 o'clock hour, all kinds of baseball. Giants, Nats, Braves, Marlins, Orioles, Rays, White Sox, Tigers. We get the Rockies and the Reds, Padres, Mets, Mariners, Indians, Blue Jays, Red Sox. Boy, a lot of games in that 5 o'clock hour. 6:10 tonight, we get the Astros and the Twins. The Pirates will return to the field to take on the Brewers. Brandon Woodruff, who was one of my sleeper, sneaky, good pitcher picks at the beginning of the year, a guy that I thought would maybe give a run for Cy Young consideration. 4-2 with a 1.4 ERA for the Brewers right now. We get the Angels and the Diamondbacks at 7:40, along with the Royals and A's. And then the nightcap tonight, Dodgers and the Rangers. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports scene. Quiet on the news front, but that's okay. We have plenty to talk about. It's NBA playoff time. Let's break for just a moment. We'll give you the local sports recap, and Coach John Famalo will join us on the other side of the break right after this on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We have hit somewhat of a lull as far as the high school sports scene is concerned. I mean, right now we have Legion Baseball going on. Helper playing again tonight under the lights at the Legion Field. But the preparation for the fall 2021 high school season is well underway. In fact, we're about 2 months away from the start of the high school football season, and that brings us a game of intrigue right out of the gate. Carbon and Emory will open up the football season against one another at Carbon High. Again, about 2 months of prep work before we get to that point. And we'll talk about the offseason right now with our next guest, Coach John Famallo with the Emory Spartans, joining us right now over the phone. Coach, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, not a problem. I'm looking forward to this year, too. So excited. Football's getting started.
Yeah, Coach, I mean, if you go back to last season, and there was so much up in the air, I thought it was one of the more difficult seasons to prepare for, be it from a coach, a player, or even a media standpoint. You just never knew what the season was going to bring. We didn't even know if we were going to have a season. It could have ended at any given time. We get through it, and it almost felt like that breakout season for this Emory High School football program. You know, we've been close to turning the corners. You go back a few years, there were some games that this squad easily could have won, came out on the short end of the scoreboard. And we even had a couple of instances like that last season. But in the same sense, this is a team that took a big step forward, a program that took a big step forward.
Yeah, no, I felt like we did last year, and like you say, going into it, we didn't know we didn't even have a season, and so that was a little bit disappointing to know. Had a lot of kids that I was looking forward to, you know, having a senior season, and so to see that, you know, come to fruition for them and to be able to full season and, you know, kind of, you know, get on the winning side of the ball, which just was good for those kids in that season like we did. Like you say, there were some games we left out there that we wish we could have had back, but at the end of the day, you know, it was a big success for us in moving forward and moving this program forward to kind of the direction we want to go.
And Coach, I don't think it's a coincidence that really last year there were no significant injuries that really thwarted the squad. I mean, I would have to go back. Maybe I should have looked at this before you and I sat down for this conversation. It was the first time in a very long time you started and finished with a quarterback.
Yeah, no, it has been a few years since we've started with one quarterback, and so, you know, that helped in our success of having some stability at that position. It's a big key position, so, you know, it was just nice to be able to, you know, have some kids that we ran throughout the whole season on both sides of the ball to be able to finish the season that way.
Coach, was it easier for you, or I don't want to use the word easier, is it more exciting for you as soon as last season ended, looking at some of the success that this team accumulated, to get rolling with 2021? Because, you know, we had some down years. And again, there is some excitement. I know that we'll talk about the roster construction here in just a moment, but you have a lot of skill position players coming back. A lot of these kids did great, great things last year. I'm sure it made it at least a little bit more enticing to get rolling with this upcoming season.
Yeah, as a coach, it's always nice to know you have some kids that are coming back from last year that performed well. And so for us, you know, that was the whole key to our success is, you know, building a program from, you know, the ground up, from young guys up to old guys, so you continue to feed your program that way. And, you know, we've had that these last couple of years, and so it's nice to know that, you know, even though we lost some great seniors, I've got some great seniors coming up that are going to fill in for them. And the same thing from sophomores to juniors, each kid is realizing, recognizing they need to step up and able to, you know, to be able to perform and step up to that next level of varsity football.
Well, Coach, let's talk about the offseason so far. What does it look like up to this point in time? What are some of the things that you guys have been able to accomplish?
I mean, we've started weights this week, which is good to get the kids back in there. Again, we're going through our leadership training stuff and then trying to get these kids, you know, try to understand what it takes to be a leader, and then also just getting started with getting on the field. What's nice is a lot of these kids know what we're doing both offensively and defensively, and so, you know, it just seems like we're kind of picking up where we left off last year, so we're not having to retrace a lot of our steps on some of these things that we're trying to do offensively and defensively, so it's nice that the kids have a really good feel for that. We're headed out to a couple 7-on-7 camps this month in Payson and Manti, and so kids are looking forward to that, being able to compete and, you know, hopefully get better and figure out some things and on both sides of the ball, and so that's kind of where we're standing. We don't have a ton of other stuff, and we're staying home for football camp this year, which is a little bit different, and so kids aren't as excited. We usually travel and spend a week away from home, but we're going to do something at, you know, home, and hopefully still continue to build a little bit of camaraderie and team spirit for the kids that we have.
Coach, you talk about the 7-on-7 camps and even the summer camp here that is going to be at home this year. What are your number restrictions? I mean, or are there restrictions at all as far as these 7-on-7 camps are concerned? How many kids can you take and how many do you plan on taking?
This first camp, we're hoping to take a couple of varsity and a JV team, but got a few of my seniors that are taking ACT tests, and so we've had to combine those two teams. So I just have a varsity team headed to the one this coming Saturday. Hopefully, the one at the end of the month at Manti, we'll have two teams, plus a big man team. That was one thing, you know, a highlight I thought of our last year was our big men won the big man competition over there, which was a big deal. I felt gave the kids a lot of confidence going into the season. And so when we go to Manti, we'll probably have close to 30 kids or more competing and, you know, having a good time over there.
Again, our guest right now, Coach John Fumalo with the Emory High School football team. Coach, you talked about winning the big man competition last year, and as you and I were talking off the cuff, you had mentioned that's going to be one of the big points of emphasis, developing some depth and some skill up front. I mean, that's the biggest hole on this year's team.
Yeah, we had four seniors last year on the line, and so I bring, you know, a center. I had two centers last year that both, you know, played a little bit that were juniors, and so feeling, you know, two guard and tackle spots this year is going to be a big deal. But I feel good about the juniors we have coming up. This is a group that had a full JV season, which was nice to be able to work together and kind of develop as a squad. And so, you know, I think that's what I look forward to is they work really well together. And so similar to the last year's group, you know, they kind of help each other. They play, a lot of them played on the defensive side and spelled on the offensive side here and there, but they're going to have to do some things on both sides of the ball this year for us and trying to find a little bit more depth, hopefully with a few other kids stepping up. And so that's kind of where we're at on the front.
Coach, it will look different this year. Emory now 2A as far as football is concerned, and it puts the Spartans in the 2A North with ALA, Judge Memorial, Providence Hall, South Summit, Summit Academy. A lot of trips up north, a little different when you look at the South. I mean, I think regionally we fit better in the South, but for whatever reason, the squad's in the North. What do you make of the 2A classification and the new placing for your squad?
I think it's going to be a competitive league. I mean, the 2A division for us is, you know, kind of a good fit for us. Again, traveling up north, you know, will be a little bit different for our kids, missing some of the natural rivalries, and again with Carbon and maybe even San Juan Grand, you know, passing us while we go head up north. But you know, there's a little unfamiliarity with some of those teams up north, but teams that we've played, you know, a Judge and a Summit Academy, you know, with South Summit. It's been a while since we've played them, and so it'd be nice to kind of reestablish some of those games that we used to play with some of those teams and see where we fit. But, you know, I think it's a great fit for us competitive-wise, and, you know, I think an opportunity to continue to build this program.
You mentioned Carbon being a rivalry game, obviously not a league opponent anymore, but, Coach, you will get the Dinos. That's how the season opens, actually, August 13th, about 2 months away. Oh, boy, what a way to start off the season. Typically, I'll talk to the kids at the beginning of the year, and they always say they have that game circled. It's typically mid-September, late September, but here we are, beginning of August. Unique way to start the season, no less.
Yeah, for sure. For us to not have Carbon in our region, but to start off that first game. So, you know, it'll be a different feel, but I think at the same time, a game that all these kids look forward to, you know, from Carbon and Emory. So, look forward to that.
Coach, you and I were talking about the schedule right now somewhat being incomplete because as it sits right now, a bye week, that last week of August, I know you're still trying to fill a game in there. I mean, from a coaching staff's perspective, how important is it to get 10 games rather than 9 in the regular season, especially with the RPI?
I think that's the biggest key is RPI. Again, I think having one less game, I don't know if that I don't think that helps you, not having that 10th game. And so, you know, seeking for a game, I think, will help. You know, I looked at it as, okay, hey, maybe it's an opportunity to recover. We have a tough preseason. We still play North San Pete. We still play a JUAB and, you know, some of those teams that we've fought in the past that have really beat us up. And so, you know, I thought that third week, if we ended up with a bye, it's not going to be a bad deal to be able to hopefully recover. But I think to have 10 games is important for that RPI ranking and to see, hopefully, you don't drop by not having a game.
Coach, we can jump back over and talk about the summer. Between now and then, I mean, and this is probably becoming somewhat routine for you. Is it seven seasons now, Coach? Six seasons that you're going in?
I've lost track. Yeah. I should know, but I don't. It's probably five or six somewhere in there.
Yeah, 6 years, Coach, going in as head coach of this program. I mean, in June, do you have something specific that you want to make sure that you take care of in certain months leading up to August?
I think for the biggest thing is, you know, is just building team chemistry, getting in the weight room together, again, practicing and other things like that. I think the kids know kind of what to expect in the summer. And so for me, it's about, you know, building a little bit of brotherhood and family atmosphere that these kids feel like, especially the young ones, that it's a fun atmosphere, that they want to belong, and that they'll continue to participate. And, you know, I think football will take care of itself as far as the X's and O's. We have, I mean, it's a short window that we have to put some things in, but like I say, I feel comfortable where we're at because I feel like we're, you know, kids have been in my program for 4 years. They know what we're doing and what we're trying to accomplish. But for me, I think the biggest thing is just building, hopefully, an atmosphere of fun and a culture that will allow these kids to grow as young men and hopefully be good leaders.
Now, Coach, we can end with this. One thing that your program, really, since I've been here now, going on for 12 seasons, one of the things that you guys have always possessed, it's continuity within the coaching staff and some minor tweaks this year, but for the most part, once again, you have everyone returning.
Yeah, we got most of the coaching staff back. I mean, we'll miss Coach Eric Mortensen. Again, he was a big part of our program as far as the offensive line, and so I'm hopefully stepping in that role along with Coach Howard to kind of shore that up, and so I've got some learning to do. Haven't ever played offensive line, but understand some things, and hopefully can help these kids continue to develop. And I say consistency is a big thing. If the kids know what to expect, I think that helps.
Well, Coach, it's definitely great to start talking football once again. I know we'll have more conversations in the lead-up to the season opener again on August 13th. But thank you again for the time. Great to chat with you. And you guys travel safe to the 7-on-7s.
All right. Hey, appreciate it, Jordan. Thank you.
That's Coach John Fumalo again of the Emory High School football team talking about the offseason, which is off and rolling. Emory traveling on the road tomorrow and then again next week for a 7-on-7 camp. Let's break for just a moment. When we return, we'll talk NBA basketball. The Utah Jazz take a 2-0 lead over the Clippers with a win last night at home. We'll talk Jazz basketball right after this.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll it. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
Last night, right here on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the Utah Jazz take a commanding 2-0 lead over the Los Angeles Clippers. That game had a little bit of everything. Utah up big, Utah fighting from behind late, Donovan Mitchell doing what Donovan Mitchell has done best this postseason. It's definitely been a fun series. We're going to talk about Game 3, which, of course, will air right here tomorrow night, as the Jazz will definitely look to take a stranglehold on the series. I think they get one win in L.A., the series may be done. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the doubleheader coming up at 5:30 tonight as we get the Sixers and the Hawks, and then we get the Suns and the Nuggets. Joining us over the phone right now, Mark Schindler has joined us a couple of times here on the show. He's the co-host of Premium Hoops. We'll talk about that, podcast host as well. We'll get into all that and more. Mark, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I appreciate the time again today.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Jordan. I'm psyched to be back on. It's a nice, humid day here in Cleveland, Ohio, so I'm definitely keeping inside. My dog has been not as happy that we're inside the whole day, but good work day, man. How have things been on your end?
Yeah, things are beautiful. Weather's fine here in the state of Utah, and right now there's just a different buzz in the air with NBA basketball. First time I've worked in media where this kind of buzz has been flirting around. I mean, we can go all the way back to 2008. The Jazz made a nice run, but you had to run into Kobe and the Lakers. And that was kind of a foregone conclusion for about three seasons here in the state of Utah. I don't know that anyone really thought this team could win an NBA championship. And for those who did not think that this year, you've got to start becoming a believer after what we watched last night. Utah taking a 2-0 lead over the Clippers, a team that you and I both were very high on at the end of the regular season, Mark.
Yeah, it's been a really good series so far for the Jazz. So the simple way to start off. I've just been so impressed with them, but also I have to counter and say too, I've been really disappointed with the Clippers this entire postseason. I thought they should have taken the Mavs out in 5 or 6 games. They've been doing some really wonky stuff on defense that I'm not a fan of. They've just completely jerked around their rotation multiple times and really don't seem settled into anything. And it's just weird. I don't really understand what all has been going on with them. Like, I can understand, like, schematically seeing that, but internally I'm, like, just not really sure where they're coming from on some things. But the biggest thing is, Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell have been absolutely fantastic to open up. I mean, Donovan's averaging 41 points across, of course, a small sample size, but I don't care. Like, he's just been awesome. I was thinking about this today. Like, he's probably one of the best guys in the NBA at splitting double teams. Like, I put this clip up on my Twitter when I was rewatching this morning. I think it was in the second quarter when he splits PG and Nick Batum. And his body control at the rim is just amazing. It's been so cool to watch him take another postseason leap like this. Like, I didn't think he could do anything at the top of what he did in the first round last year. And here he is doing it again in the second round against the Clippers, man.
Doing it against a much better team defensively as well. I mean, against the Nuggets, with what he did last year, it was jaw-dropping impressive. But when you're doing this against a team that has perimeter defenders like Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, it really is off the charts. Now, let's talk about some of the things. We'll start with the Clippers here. Because over the first two games, two things that have stood out to me, Marcus Morris could not hit water if he fell out of a boat right now. This guy has been dreadful, and last night he was dreadful once again. He's 0-5 from deep. I believe he was 1-9, if I'm not mistaken, in game one. I don't have those stats brought up. It was something similar to that.
1-14 in the entire series right now.
Dreadful.
He's been rough.
Yeah, it's dreadful, and he is still putting up shots at key moments. And I have to question Ty Lue in this regard because Morris played 37 minutes last night. Now, I understand the Zubas and the Gobert matchup. It's not ideal, right? I almost feel like Zubas is nearly unplayable in this series. That's kind of the way I view Zubas at this point in time. But Ty Lue has got to figure something out with Marcus Morris because it's not working. And I almost feel like the last two games, Morris has shot the Clippers out of two wins.
Yeah, so I have a couple things on that. The biggest one for me was Zubac. I understand where a lot of people are coming from. And granted, he has not had a good postseason, but also, like, they have put him in really terrible positions. And I think part of that has fed into his confidence being where it's at. Like, he is just not playing super confident basketball right now. But my thing is, the Clippers were actively looking to ice every pick and roll from Donovan Mitchell yesterday, at least to open the game. And that led to Donovan Mitchell getting three straight wide open off the dribble threes, which he nails at a really high rate. I think that sparked they go up 11-2 or 11-4 really early. And I think people will point and say it's Zubac's fault, but you look at it and they're asking Zubac to play play center field, so not a full drop, but like halfway between a full drop and to the level of the screen. What I don't understand is if you're Ty Lue, why aren't you asking? If you want to ice that pick and roll whenever Zubac is in it, then you either play him at the level of the screen or you just play somebody else if you want to play that way, because they're just giving Donovan Mitchell wide open shots. And so part of it is, like, yes, Zubac is on the floor and it's a mistake that happens, but the coaching staff is asking to do it, which is kind of wild to me, because it's just pretty clearly, like, if you watch Donovan Mitchell play for 10 minutes this year, you know that's a terrible idea. But I mean, credit too to Rudy, because Rudy does a great job of any time that they're trying to flip that action. He sets the screen, but he rescreens really quickly to make it harder to fight back over. But yeah, the Clippers have just been doing some kind of galaxy brain stuff on defense, honestly.
It hasn't made a lot of sense. I mean, it really hasn't. And I know that there's still plenty of time for the Clippers to right this ship. You were talking about Donovan Mitchell, but you and I off the cuff, Mark, also had a conversation about Rudy Gobert. And I have no doubt in my mind that Donovan Mitchell's been the best player in this series. Let's make that perfectly clear. But what Gobert has been able to accomplish, especially last night, there's a guy that goes for 13-20. And when he starts hitting his free throws, this is a problem for a lot of teams. Donovan Mitchell may be the most satisfying player, especially if you're looking at statistics. But Rudy Gobert may have the biggest impact in the entire postseason up to this point in time.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd go over Joel Embiid. I think Joel Embiid's probably had the biggest impact this offseason. Not offseason, postseason. Gosh, it feels like it should be offseason.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Looking at, I'm so messed up with time and everything. But looking at Gobert, it's really finicky. One of my things that I've really gotten frustrated with this year is everybody trying to, power rank the top three Jazz players, and everybody goes every which direction with it. I'm like, well, it just kind of depends on the night, and also it's all about synergy. Like, this team is not 52-20 if they don't have the kind of synergy that they've had this year. So to me, it's less about one guy, but a lot of it does come back to Rudy. Like, the impact is huge. Like, we were talking about this, like you mentioned before we got on. His role gravity has been awesome. Like, just right up, like off rip, that's been awesome. Especially with how small the Clippers have been going, with how little Zubac has actually ended up playing. Rudy's been great at getting inside and finishing, because that's been a problem for him before. Like, in the Houston series, he didn't finish well, or at least well enough, considering who he's going up against. He's been awesome at that this year in the postseason. But also, it's just the defense. Like, the amount of drives that he stops from even happening, like Reggie Jackson or Kawhi or PG is coming down the lane, and they see Rudy and they hesitate or they just stop outright. He's been incredible on the defense, man. And so much stuff, even, it's like the block shots are nice, but outside of that too, he's been good rotating out onto the perimeter. He's just been he's been so good, man. Like, he's throwing a wrench into everything that the Clippers are trying to do on offense.
Mark, I feel as if the Clippers have to take both in Staples for them to have a chance to win this. I just don't know. For one, this is not Dallas we're talking about. This is the Utah Jazz with three All-Stars. And if we see Mike Conley within the next, three games or so, you're going to have to beat a fully healthy Jazz team twice at Vivint. I just don't see that happening. I'm viewing it as the Clippers have to get a win tomorrow. They have to win game four to have a chance in this series. I'm curious as to your thoughts.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Like, this is not like playing Dallas, like you're mentioning. Like, I think you really need to win both games back home if you're the Clippers. Ideally, they hadn't lost both games at Vivint, but it's so weird to know what to think with this, because I thought that series was done after game five last round, and lo and behold, the Clippers were able to come out and pull it out. Like you mentioned, it's different. We actually talked about this too in terms of looking at Mike Conley coming back, and you brought up something really good with me about maybe Mike Conley not coming back in the next game, even if he is healthy. And I think in thinking about it, that does make sense to me, because I don't want to rush him back. You want him to be right. You don't want to and that's not to say that the training staff isn't going to be on top of that. Like, I have no doubt that they would be, but it's just given that it's playoff basketball, they're going to try and get him out there as soon as possible. But I do think there is something to it. Like, you have to think about too, okay, Mike hasn't played the entire postseason. If he comes back now, there's a lot of chances for him to be rusty. Like, he probably would come off the bench and it would be a little bit different. But at the same time, you're like, okay, well, we're on a good roll right now. We're up 2-0. I'm willing to maybe take that chance and see if we can take game three without Mike, without, you know, getting him some extra rest. I think there's some real merit to that idea.
Yeah, and my whole thought process behind this is, right now you're playing every other day. We're not seeing the big gaps in between games. And so the idea that Conley couldn't play in game two, but he could play in game three, well, in my mind, you might as well wait and play him in game four, because you have control of the series. A hamstring injury is something that can linger throughout the entire postseason. Just look at Brooklyn. Look at what's happening with James Harden. You're in control of a series. Rest that particular injury. We saw it with Chris Paul when he was with the Houston Rockets. To me, the risk-reward right now, the risk does not, the risk outweighs the reward at this point in time, because you have managed to handle the Clippers twice. Until control of the series is up in the air, I say you rest your all-star point guard. I think he's that important to this Jazz team as well.
Oh, definitely, man. Like, I think if they really want to, of course they want to win a title, but to actually, A, get there, because whoever they play in the next round, which I think is going to be Phoenix, that's going to be really tough. If you don't have Mike, I would take the Jazz if Mike's not playing, to be completely honest. But also, like, even looking past that, if you get to the finals and you don't have Mike Conley, I just don't really know what you're getting there. That's asking a lot out of the rotation without him. So I'm in total agreement with you, especially too, just even defensively. The offense is where I think you come into the biggest problems. But defensively, I think he's been missed.
Again, Mark Schindler joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball. We'll talk more about Mark's work in just a moment. Mark, we do have a doubleheader tonight that we have to talk about, one being in the Western Conference. Phoenix seems to have complete control over the Nuggets. We talked yesterday about Mike Malone really taking it to his team using the Q word, which you hate to hear from a coach. You rarely hear that from a coach, but he did drop that after Game 2. And we also have Philly and Atlanta tonight. Atlanta has stolen home court advantage. I still feel really comfortable with where Philly is at in that series. I just love what they bring to the table. How do you see these two games playing out?
I think I'm going to take Phoenix tonight again. It's, you know, just looking at the way that they played, Michael Porter Jr., I mean, again, I'm not medical staff, but his shot was not there. Like, he was taking a shot that looked completely different than his regular form. He tweaked his back in game one, and I felt that there was no reason for him to be out on the court, in my opinion. Like, he was clearly not able to bend. His flexibility wasn't there. He just didn't look comfortable. It just felt like, okay, get him some rest, play somebody else, see where he can get going. Jokic struggled a little bit in game two, but part of that's just they have nobody else right now that is able to get to the rim consistently. And I've gotten a little bit frustrated, is the wrong way to put it, but on the broadcast or just in general, people are saying, oh, well, they're settling and getting to the rim. The problem is they don't have anybody who's going to get to the rim. Like, Austin Rivers is not a guy that I'm consistently counting on to drive to the hoop. Facu Campazzo is definitely not somebody I'm looking to get to the rim consistently. And even if he got there, I'm not looking at him to finish. A lot of it right now is just, this is what happens when you don't have Jamal Murray. This is what happens when you don't have PJ Dozier. They've really missed defensively. And he also does a lot as a secondary creator. Like, overall, I mean, this has just been a letdown series for the Nuggets. I think their defense has been really poor. The offense hasn't. I mean, they've missed a ton. It's a really reductive way to put it. But overall, I think they should be playing better. But I still think the series should be 2-0. I mean, the Suns are playing. I might catch flack for this. They've played better than the Jazz this postseason.
I agree.
Like, they look.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're spot on with that.
Out of all the teams I'm watching, I think the Suns, other than the Nets, have been the most impressive team to me. I came into this postseason thinking that the Suns were a team that could make the Western Conference Finals, and now I'm thinking that the Suns could make the NBA Finals. They've been absolutely incredible to me. Chris Paul's injury really seems to not be hampering him anymore and just is flat out away. Devin Booker's been incredible. I'm going to take the Suns tonight, although I wouldn't be surprised if the Nuggets win. Like, I think the Nuggets will win at least one game, because Nikola Jokic is the MVP and deserving MVP, and he's been fantastic. And he's capable of pulling a game out for them. But I just don't think they have the horses to win the series. But then looking over to Atlanta and Philadelphia, I think I'm a little bit more confident in Atlanta than everyone else is. I know that they did a much better job of trying to stifle Trey in game two, but I think overall, in looking at the series, like, I still am just unsure about Embiid's health. Like, he's out there playing on one knee pretty much, which always makes me nervous for any player. He's still been absolutely fantastic, but they're really not getting the contributions that you want offensively from Ben Simmons. And again, he's been incredible defensively. I don't want to take anything away from him there, but the free throw shooting has become that's just compounded in the postseason. After it was starting to get better in the regular season, that's gone now. I would also point out the Sixers have been ridiculously hot from the field. Shooting variance does matter and plays a big part in the playoffs. I think this is a much closer series than some people seem to think. But I think we're in line for a much better Trey game tonight. I'm going to take the Hawks because they're back in Atlanta.
Love it. Love it. Mark Schindler, again, our guest right now. Mark, before I let you go, as always, great stuff. Please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Yeah, you can find me at MSchindlerNBA on Twitter. You can find my work at premiumhoops.org, and my podcast is just this Premium Hoops. We have a couple of pods on the network. We've been doing really great stuff, and we're starting to ramp up. We're revamping the website right now, actually, so that should be changed up in about a week or so. But yeah, man, you can find most of my work just up on Twitter, and I'm pretty active there, and I appreciate you having me on, man.
It's always fun, Mark. We'll do it again real soon. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the games.
You do the same.
Let's get out for another quick commercial break. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return, and it's right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
Back to wrap up this week of Drive Time Sports. Got Clippers Jazz for another second. Some bad news for the Clippers. Serge Ibaka, he's out for the remainder of the playoffs. He had to undergo back surgery. Missed 30 straight games due to the back injury before returning for the final two games of the regular season. Played the first two games against the Mavericks. Hadn't played since. They were 0-2 in the playoffs with Ibaka. But in this series with Utah, Ibaka would be... I'm not going to say Ibaka is a series changer, but he would have a role in this series.
Yeah, he's a guy that can spread the floor because he can shoot a three.
He can.
So he's going to kind of, you know, take away the lane defensively. But yeah, I don't know how much of a difference he would make. Really, if you look at the series, it's the Clippers' role players. You know, Morris is not hitting, and Batum's really not hitting. They're getting wide open threes in the corner. Those are shots in the regular season that they hit. If you go back to Game 7 against Dallas, Morris was on fire. Really good in that game. You know, was it the difference in the game, really, them separating from Dallas? But first two games, he can't hit.
Yeah, so no Serge Ibaka. Again, something that I don't want to say it's good news for the Jazz. It's never good news when an injury pops up, but the Clippers will be out without a guy that would play a key role within the squad moving forward. Utah and the Clippers tomorrow night right here at KOAL. 6:20 is when pregame will begin. Tip-off will follow at 6:30. Two games tonight, Philly and Atlanta. We also get Phoenix and Denver. I do want to step away from the NBA for a moment, though. We've talked nothing but NBA basketball, it seems like, all week long. So let's wrap up these final couple of minutes with baseball. Yesterday, I played the clip of the Pete Alonso interview where he basically said Major League Baseball has doctored the balls depending on free agency classes. Okay, I don't want to play the full interview again, but basically Pete Alonso said he doesn't care if pitchers have substances on their fingers, because he's seeing balls being thrown 95 plus miles an hour at him, and he wants pitchers to have complete control. That was his take. And that's a fair take, by the way.
It is fair.
That's a fair take that nobody ever mentions.
Yeah, pitchers have been doctoring balls for years. I mean, now we're going to crack down on it. Rob Manfred, you already know how I feel about him, but...
Okay, so keep hold that thought. This is basically what Pete Alonso said. He claimed that Major League Baseball intentionally juiced balls before pitchers like Gerrit Cole hit the market. So what he's saying is, if it's a heavy dose of pitchers hitting the market, Major League Baseball will juice the balls so pitchers' numbers go up. Then he said that when there's a talented group of hitters, and I'm paraphrasing here, when there's a talented group of hitters getting ready to become free agents, they deaden the ball like they have this season. That's Pete Alonso's take, that Major League Baseball manipulates the ball depending on the free agent market.
And he says it's widespread throughout Major League Baseball.
Yeah, he did.
They believe that.
He did. He fully believes this. And when a player sits down and makes a statement like that, I mean, that's onions to say something like that. Now, Zach Scott, who's the acting general manager of the New York Mets, said that that has absolutely no way. He said, quote, no influence on how players are valued or paid. Well, I don't agree with that.
No.
Okay, you can say what you want. And I do believe that he's trying to maybe soften the conspiracy theory that Pete Alonso was thrown out. But you can't tell me that someone who hits 40 home runs in 2021 is going to be paid the same as someone who hits 25. You can't tell me that that's factual. So I'm not saying that Pete Alonso's correct. I'm saying he's opened up a can of worms.
He has, and we don't know. But if Pete Alonso's not the only one that feels this way, so they've got to have some sort of feeling around Major League Baseball that something's going on. Because it's not just one guy's opinion, it's multiple.
It is, but I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Major League Baseball did inform teams going back to February that they did plan on slightly deadening the balls. They told Major League Baseball that. Teams that.
They do this.
Okay, they said that. So maybe that's why Pete Alonso feels that way. Maybe it's his interpretation on what they're doing. But again, the numbers, they're factual. 2019, 3.6% of plate appearances ended in a home run. That number is now 3.1 this year. And when you look at some of the pitching numbers, they're phenomenal. Now, here's the problem I have. If Major League Baseball did inform teams in February that they were going to deaden the ball, which they did, why the crackdown on pitchers all of a sudden? You should expect these offensive numbers to drop if you deaden the ball.
Yeah, we're going to see pitchers get checked, 10 times a game, they say? So as they're coming off the field, they can be checked up to 10 times. So Major League Baseball just doing whatever they want.
And it's only when it reverts to defense, because that's what pitching is, it's defense, right? That's when baseball has their problems. It's never when the offensive numbers are soaring. Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire, we're going to turn our head. Why? Because it's good for the game. These guys are blasting 60 and 70 home runs. This is good for the game.
They captured the nation. It brought in viewers that they needed. And then, yeah, they just turn a blind eye to certain things.
Jacob DeGrom, 0.7 ERA. Trevor Bauer, outstanding last year, Cy Young Award winner. Something's got to be happening. We got to crack down on this. That's my problem with baseball. Out of top of this week of Drive Time Sports, he's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.